Well, thank you for those of you that gave some input for this past Easter. It was, a powerful week, and I think it was touched a lot of people. We're continuing through our series on the miracles of Jesus called Jesus Top 10 List. And so for 2 weeks, we kind of jumped forward in Jesus' life. And we talked about Palm Sunday and then Easter Sunday appropriately, of course. But now we're going to jump back to the early part of Jesus' ministry. And if you remember, 3 or 4 weeks ago, we talked about, we took a break for Lent, and we talked about Matthew 25. So we haven't been talking about the miracles of Jesus since before Ash Wednesday, so early February. So it's been a little while. We took a little two-month break. Now we're going to jump back in. So the last miracle that we talked about with Jesus was when he healed the demoniac. You love that word, right? Demoniac. Kind of a maniac. Yeah, no. Named Legion, right? And of course, Legion, I mean, it has its own TV show now. It's a kind of a famous word. But that was the last miracle we talked about. So now we have this interesting story that Nathan read for us a few minutes ago about Jairus, who was a synagogue leader, and his daughter, who was very sick. And then this woman who he saw along the way. So it's kind of an interesting story because it's really a twofer. You get two stories in one. There's two miracles that happen in this one story, and there's this kind of interruption along the way. So you have Jairus, who is the synagogue leader, well respected in his community. And then you have this woman who was hemorrhaging for many, many years, who's not even named. Who would be an outcast in that society, on the other hand. But they're linked together, and they're linked together by two ideas. One is desperation. They're both desperate, and the other, faith. So we're going to look a little more about that. They're both desperate. So Jesus has become quite famous. People are flocking to him now because he's healing people. He's doing these incredible miracles. And the synagogue leader, Jairus, hears about this. Now, we don't know what synagogue it is. It just says that Jesus came back from the Gerasenes. The Gerasenes is on the, eastern side of the lake. And so he's come back into Israel's side of the lake. And we don't know if it was Tiberias or if it was Where did Peter grow up? You know? Not Rome. Rome. we don't know which town it was. Galilee, that's the area that there's a town. And I've been to the synagogue in the town that I can't remember. it's still standing, just about this tall the walls are now, but so he was a synagogue leader. That meant he was you have to remember, like, even 50 years ago, remember how pastors were treated compared to today? You think a lot better today? Boy, 50 years ago, the pastor would walk in and was like this elevated position, right? Well, that's kind of the way it was in this society. A synagogue leader was well respected. Now they're kind of like, ooh, you're a pastor? But that's kind of a side rabbit hole there. Now think about this. Exactly. think about this. This is a synagogue leader. This is a religious leader. Think about how the religious leaders were viewing Jesus at this time. So why was it that Jairus felt, because the religious leaders did not like Jesus. He was much too popular for them. He was an upstart. He was not educated. He had not gone to any of the proper rabbis to learn anything. And so the religious leaders were looking down upon him, and the people were flocking to him. And they were losing some of their popularity, some of their power, some of their control in the society. And so this Jesus guy is doing all these things, and they're kind of like, ugh. They didn't like him. They were the ones that said, as Becky said, let his blood be upon us and upon our children. So why did Jairus feel comfortable going to Jesus? Well, his daughter was sick. If you heard my sermon last week, as Hortensia alluded to, I talked about how my daughter, when she was sick, I would do anything to take her place. When your child is sick, you will do anything. You don't care what your friends think. You don't care about anything else. You'll do anything. And that's what Jairus did. He went to Jesus because he heard he was getting results. And that's all he cared about. So he goes to Jesus. My little girl is at the point of death. Come, lay hands on her. Now, I love Jesus' response. Because if it was me, and you're all thinking, well, thank God you're not Jesus. If it was me, I would have said, oh, sure, now you like me, right? You've been complaining and making comments and criticizing and talking about me, but now that you need me, sure, you love me. Your daughter's sick, and so now you're coming running to me. But the Bible doesn't say that. It just says Jesus went with him. No further conversation. Jesus said, okay, I'll go. And they were on their way. Now, here's the thing. You know, we sang Famous One to get the idea that Jesus was famous. I mean, paparazzi were coming. They were flocking to him. They were always around him. People were always around him. They wanted to get near him because he was so popular. I mean, I had this idea, and it probably would have been silly, but I was going to have everybody stand up and move into the center, and then I was going to try and walk through, you know, because that's what was going on. People were on the sides of the roads. As soon as they heard it, the word would get out. People would come from all over the region to see, just to see Jesus. And here's this woman doing everything she can. She's been hemorrhaging. That means a menstrual cycle has been going on for decades. Now, I want you to think about this. She had some sort of disease which caused her to bleed. In this culture, all the way back to the Levitical law, when a woman was on her cycle, she was supposed to go separate herself from others. All the husbands are going, hey, that's okay. Sorry, that wasn't in my notes. I'm sorry, that just slipped out. If you haven't read it, it's really a fascinating book. It's called The Red Tent. And it's about part of the culture of the, it's a novel. It's based on Dinah, I think it is, who was the sister of the 12 brothers of Jacob. The one female, yes, the one female. And this is about the red tent. And according to legend, they had a tent where the women who were going through their time of the month would go and congregate and be together during that period of time. And so it's a fascinating book. It's a movie too?
Yeah, that's a movie too.
Oh, there you go. It's a movie too. So I just want you to think about this woman. Literally decades, she would have been shunned because of that. She could not go to the temple because she would have been considered unclean. She could not touch another human being because if she touched another human being, that human being would be unclean for a week, ceremonially unclean. She could not have relationship with her husband. It was against the law. And so if she had been married, she would have been pushed away. And she spent all her money on physicians at the time trying to get well, and nobody helped her to get well. So she was unclean, she was outcast, and she was completely broke. She was desperate. Jairus was desperate because it was his daughter. She was desperate because she was at the bottom. She couldn't go any lower. And I love the fact that it says all she wanted to do was just touch his cloak. She didn't need to touch him. Just the fringe of his cloak. She felt like the power was so palpable. That's all she needed to do. She was looking for healing, religious purification, healing, financial stability, healing, a beginning of a new life. All she said was, if I but touch his clothes. She didn't stop him. She didn't ask him to lay hands on her. She didn't have a conversation with him. All she did was reach out and touch his clothes. And don't you love his response? Who touched me? She just touched his clothes. He's walking through a crowd. There's all kinds of people around him. Who touched me? She gets scared, kind of backs up, but she knew right away she was healed. Can you imagine how excited she'd be? Decades. Here, and suddenly, boom, she's restored. Who touched me? Don't you love, I love the disciples. They're like, dude, are you kidding me? Do you see all the people around you? You're asking who touched you? Yes, who touched me? I felt power go out of me. There's power in touch, right? Jesus didn't let her go away. He drew her to him and said, your faith has made you well. He did that to let the crowds know and everybody around her know that she was no longer an outcast. Her ceremonial defilement had been removed. In the same way, because of our sin, we are outcast from God, but we are made whole through Jesus Christ. Our defilement is washed away, it's taken away on the cross, and that defilement completely disappears. We are made whole. We are healed by the touch of Jesus Christ. We're healed indeed. Now, isn't it interesting? Jairus comes along, come and heal my daughter. Jesus is on the way. Boom, there's an interruption. What just happened? And then he's back on the road. Turns around and starts walking back to Jairus' home. And people come to him and say, oh, don't bother the teacher anymore. Your little girl has passed away. She died. Jesus is too late. Imagine what the father is feeling. Put yourself in his shoes. I've just lost my daughter. She's 12 years old. He's feeling pain. He's broken. Feeling guilt. I should have done more. I should have come earlier. All these emotions. And then Jesus says, do not fear, only believe. I don't know, if I was him, I'd be like struggling. I want to believe, but I just heard this. How can I believe? But okay, I mean this fear and hope, little glimmer of hope. Now when Jesus gets to the house of Jairus, what's going on? There were people mourning and wailing. These weren't friends necessarily. They were professional mourners. In those days, they had people that they paid to go to their homes to mourn. And the more money you had, the more mourners you had. And that meant you were really weeping. I know what some of you are thinking. I can cry pretty well. This is a good business opportunity. I'll come to your funeral. I don't know the person, but I'll cry good. Right? Well, that's what these people were doing. In Mexico, it happens. Moving to Mexico. And we see that they're not really invested in this girl, right? Because as soon as Jesus walks in and says, don't worry, she's just asleep, they laugh. What is he saying? That's just a mistake. And then Jesus comes and he takes his inner three, Peter, James, and John. We call that the inner three. He had his 12 disciples, but there were three disciples that he could take with him on certain occasions. We call them the inner three. He takes the inner three, dad, mom, and whoever was with the family at that time. So close personal friends, family. And I love it. Jesus takes the girl's hand. And I love that it says it in Aramaic. I think it's Aramaic. Talitha kum. That just resonates in me. I don't know why. Talitha kum. Little girl, get up. Talitha kum. For whatever reason, I even considered that for a name for a daughter, Talitha. I think it's very beautiful. Talitha kum. Jesus took her hand. Again, notice there's power in touch. There's power in touch. And she got up. She was raised from the dead. We talked a couple weeks ago about Lazarus being raised from the dead. That was right before Palm Sunday. This would be the first instance in which Jesus raised a person from the dead. Imagine, he was popular before this day. Imagine how popular he became after this day. Incredible. So the challenge for us, some of the things that I run through, is desperation is universal. We all go through periods of desperation, right? It's not limited to social status or social rank. You can be a leader in the community or you can be an outcast in society. Doesn't matter if you're socially elite or the poorest of the poor, we all face circumstances that make us feel desperate. Solomon, the wisest man in history, said, "The race is not always to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor bread to the wise, nor riches to the intelligent, nor favor to the skillful, but time and chance happen to them all." One of the things I appreciate and has really humbled me about working with the homeless population here is sometimes when you hear their stories, you think, gosh, one medical trauma and I'd be with you right now. Couldn't afford my bills. I could easily be homeless. So the famous saying, "There but by the grace of God go I." Jesus doesn't care about a person's social status, whether you're well-respected in the community or an outcast. Jesus cares about a person's heart, a person's soul, and a person's faith. That's why he brings up faith and belief with both parties. Your faith has made you well. Do not fear, just believe. When we truly have faith, we don't demand our requests be met in the way we want them to be met, but we trust. That's what faith is all about. Let me say that again. We don't demand that our requests be met. We just trust. That's what faith is all about. Sometimes God will make a miraculous thing happen, and that's great. Sometimes not. But we trust in God to hold us and carry us through. That's why we did the Psalm 23 at the beginning. Even in the valley of the shadow of death, I don't fear evil. I trust. I have faith because God is with me. We may not know why God answers the way he does, because we are here and we are now. We're in this mortal coil. And as Paul says, we see but through the mirror dimly. But one day we will see clearly. One day we will see face to face. One day we will fully know, even as we are fully known. So what's the lesson here for us? Desperation is universal. We all go through circumstances that make us feel desperate. When we feel desperate, be open to Christ's healing touch. Be open for him to touch you and to walk with you and to carry you through those moments. But also, turn it around. It's not just all about us. It's about the people around us as well. And everybody goes through moments of desperation. You might be sitting next to somebody that is going through a time of desperation in their own lives. Be available. I'm gonna make up a word. Be interruptible. Jesus was on a mission to save Jairus' daughter. He got interrupted. He stopped and took time to be with the woman who had been hemorrhaging for years. Be interruptible. Now, I'm not saying that it means you can be interrupted by little corny things like, Pastor Lance, should we paint the children's room green or blue? Come and you really have to deal with this right now. Well, you don't have to be interrupted by every little thing. You can put things off. But when you're at the point of desperation, be interruptible. The second lesson for me is to remember that there's power in touch. Well, I have to be very careful here because I want to say in positive touch. We've seen touch become a selfish thing. We've seen it become a depraved thing in our society, and it has become ugly in some cases. But the problem with that is we have become paranoid to reach out and touch someone, to put our arm on a person's shoulder, to offer our shoulder as comfort. But I believe there's power in touch. So be careful that our society hasn't sanitized us so much that we don't give a hug, a proper hug, that we don't reach out and put our hand on someone, that we don't take somebody's hand and comfort. Jesus took the little girl's hand. There's power in touch. The woman touched his clothes. There's power in touch. Use it wisely. Use it comfortingly. Use it gently. Use it unselfishly. And finally, be open to Jesus' touch in your own life. Where do you need healing in your life? Where do you need God's healing touch? How do you feel shackled by heavy burdens? Open yourself. Open your heart. Let God touch you.